We're going to go ahead and get started. It's good to see you all, and it's good to be here. We can leave the lights on. I'm tempted to turn it off so you can see it, but I also know we're post lunch and the day is getting long, so I don't want to encourage you to nap. So half the room works better. Would you mind switching that light switch off right behind you? And maybe that. Yeah, try that. Does that help anybody? Does that help everybody a little bit? Okay. Yeah. Well, halfway through we'll switch it so that everybody gets to nap the same amount. So. Well, thanks so much for joining today. We're going to be talking about mission, message, and media. And so my name is Josh Veach, and I am the founder of Tension Group, and we have, over the last 8 years, been working with churches and nonprofits, helping them communicate effectively and strategically. And so a lot of that is through working with churches in when it comes to establishing and connecting with your community and using the resources available to do that, specifically in creativity and the digital world. So that's kind of what we'll talk about today, and we're breaking it down into focusing on the message, the mission that God has given you as a local church, and then the message that is crafted for your community, and then the media as far as actually how you execute that. And so I want to start with talking about what I call the communication gap. And if you're following along on your worksheet there, I'm a notes taker. And so if that's not you, then feel free to not write on that. But for me, it helps me follow along. If you guys, there's plenty there. Go ahead and pass them down. And so what we're talking about here, and I apologize that that's still a little bit difficult to see, but what that says is the communication gap. And sometimes and this applies to one-on-one communication, this also applies to communication in the corporate world and even in the nonprofit world and the church world. Sometimes what we think we're saying is not always received the same way. So communication it takes two people to communicate. It takes someone who's communicating something, and then it takes another person who's receiving it. And oftentimes there's a gap there. There are things that break that up, and so we don't actually end up communicating what we think we're communicating. And maybe we're trying to say something, and we end up saying something else, and it ends up being a barrier to really what we're trying to do. So here's a few examples of maybe not the best communication approach. This one is a new sign that says new managementship, which is should not be in anyone's vocabulary because that's not an actual word, but that's not a good one. Here's this is a text message correspondence. If you can't read it, I'll read it quickly for you. And it's this is someone who's texting their mom, and so mom says, your grand aunt just passed away, LOL. And the person replying says, why is that funny? It's not funny, David. What do you mean? Mom, LOL means laughing out loud. And she says, oh my goodness, I sent that to everyone. I thought it means lots of love. I have to call everyone back now. So there's a communication gap clearly there. Here's another sign. Think, do it right the first time. Plan ahead. And the D is on the next line. So not well planned there. And those are some fun examples. But in reality, even in the church world, we have things that become part of our language all the time. And so if you're a Nazarene and you've been a Nazarene for a long time, you look at this top list of acronyms and they all make sense to you. But if you're a first-time guest at a church and we invite you to the NYI Council or the NYI gathering or the NMI group comes and talks, and I loved this morning, Dr. Mike did a great job of talking about NMI and talking about what it means. So if you were not a Nazarene and you came here this morning, you still got an understanding of what NMI means and what it functions. And I was so excited to see that, because oftentimes we don't do that. We just assume that the people we're talking to have the same knowledge and context and background that we have, and then we lose them completely in whatever we try to talk about beyond that. And the same is just true at the basic level of talking about faith and talking about the gospel. Sometimes we use terms like gospel and saved, and if you talk about being saved by the blood, and if somebody's never had any connection with church before, you've just freaked them out, right? Like, you want me to be covered by the blood? Are you serious? Like, so we have to understand that what we say and how we say it matters, and we have to communicate in a way that keeps the people that we're communicating to and with in mind. So the closed gap, the solution that we're targeting in this process, the closed gap is when our mission, our message, and our media meet, and they come together and they are in harmony. That's our goal as a local church, is to where our mission and message and media are in harmony, and we're actually communicating what we're wanting to communicate, and the people are receiving our intended message. And so through our love for people, we're driven by our mission, and we craft a message that communicates the story of God, and then we use what methods we find most effective to our local context to communicate that message. And the reason that this matters, and I want to just give a real quick disclaimer here. We're going to talk about some things that are a little bit maybe technical, and they may come off as a little bit businessy. And I want to say that's the intention here is that to understand and remember the why that we're talking about these things. The why that these things are important as far as how we communicate and what ways we communicate is because the people that we are talking to, the community around us, they are eternal beings that are created by a loving God that wants to spend eternity with them. And so that's our mission as the local church. And so at the core of everything that we're going to talk about is it's driven by this mission to make disciples. That's who we've been, that's who we're called to be. And so I don't want to get too far into talking and you think, well, this just sounds businessy and techy, and it loses the Jesus in it. That's not what that's about. We're really wanting to focus on, we're doing all these things because the message that we have is too important not to take good care of it. So the mission, the who we are, and I'm going to move through this part a little bit quick because there are a ton of excellent workshops. I tell you, the gentleman, Pastor Dave Clark, that was in here before, just knocked it out of the park. In fact, I was tempted just to skip out on this session and go to his one that he recommended. Mm-hmm. He was phenomenal. And so there are tons of great people that are talking about the mission part. So I'm just going to move through this part a little bit more quickly because the message and media would be a little bit more specific to maybe what you're after today. But we understand that God, God is really the first missionary, and he sent his son into our context. And so this great quote by David Bosch says, it's not the church of God that has a mission, but the God of mission who has a church. And this statement helps us find our part in the story of God, that we are also being sent, and we are his missionaries. And that the mission that he has for us is a multi-layered mission. Obviously, the church universal, we have Baptist brothers and sisters and Catholic brothers and sisters and Methodist brothers and sisters. We are all part of the universal church. And then we're part of the tribe of the Church of the Nazarene. And then your local church. And then us as individuals, we have mission that is different and outside of the context of even our local church as individuals. In fact, as an example, you are able to minister to your coworkers in a way that is completely different and unique than your church. Your group of people can minister to them. And so that's an example of how God's mission is multi-layered. And so as a local context, your church's mission, as a local body, is at the intersection of where God's story, the story of your church, your past, your history, your context, and then the individual stories of your people. Pastor Dave before talked about all the assets that we bring to the table through the gifts of the Holy Spirit that we have, and that's part of that, our individual stories. So where all that comes together, that's where your mission as a local church lies. So what this may look like in your local church, so my wife and I live in Springfield, Missouri, and we attend The Well, and this is the mission, this is how the church has stated the mission in the local context, where all people can be found by the grace of God, filled by the power of the Holy Spirit, and freed to love like Christ. And then, of course, you'll see below that is the overall mission of the Church of the Nazarene, to make disciples in the nations. And so The Well is located in the downtown area of Springfield where some of the needs and culture is different than maybe in the suburbs of Springfield. And so the opportunity to have that context understand that there is that God offers grace, that's an important thing for us to lead with in the local context that the well is. And so on your handout there are some questions that will later on that will kind of help you craft your message as we get into this and understand where your local mission might fit and how you might document that. So the next part as far as crafting the message and what we say is we look to Jesus as our example in life, but also when it comes to communication, that Jesus, his message was all about the kingdom, that the kingdom is here. He brought the kingdom and that it was intersecting in lives. He spoke and acted prophetically, and there's some examples there as far as clearing the temple and reading from Isaiah. And then he spoke in parables and images to the Good Samaritan, about the story of the Good Samaritan and the woman at the well. And so he understood his context, the people to which he was speaking, and he crafted his message to be in line with that, in words and ways that they would understand. Jesus understood the needs of his culture and shaped the presentation of the message to engage temporal needs and point to eternal ones. And I think too often we can get into the context of wanting to get into the eternal when people are stuck on the challenges that are right in front of them. And so we have to be working alongside and crafting our message so that it is connecting with them in their culture and then pointing them into a deeper walk, next steps that then allow you to speak into the eternal needs that they have. So here's the exercise that I was mentioning before, and this is something that is in on your sheet. These are just great questions to ask in the context of your local church or your ministry. What do the people in my community value most? What's most important to them? What spiritual questions do they wrestle with? What is the education level of the community? All these different things can kind of help you as you begin to craft your message and then deliver that, help you understand what's the best way for me to connect with my community, with my group. So then as we move into to crafting your message, the first thing that you need to do is know your audience. That again, Jesus understood his culture and what was important to them, and it's important to communicate in ways that's going to resonate with them. You know, people and all of us, we are consumers, and so if you are not a person of faith and you step into a church, your first question is, "What's in it for me?" Right? We do that when we go shopping or when we get a phone call from a salesperson or whatever. The question is, "Well, what's in it for me?" And our hope is that as someone is discipled, that shifts then to be, well, what do I have to bring? But we don't come to faith that way. We come to faith as consumers. And so as when we're crafting our message, we have to keep that in mind, that's the mindset that we're going to be talking to. The next example there is to be creative. We live in a huge world. I mean, just if you look up into the stars and start, I'm not a great person of science, but I am fascinated by outer space. The fact that we are this little tiny dot in this huge galaxy, to me, it just points to the creativity of the God that we serve. And yet too often when it comes to our how we function and how we operate, if we are made in the image of God, we are made to be creative beings. And we all have different skill sets, and so we're obviously, I can't look at a blank canvas and paint a masterpiece. But there are some around us that can, and my creativity may come out in different ways. But the point is, we all together as a church, we should be leading in creativity because we serve a creative God. The next thing is to make it high quality. Because we're doing church work does not give us an out, does not give us an excuse to cut corners. We would not, hopefully, build a building that wouldn't withstand a storm. When we're going through the process of building things and doing things, we owe it to God and to the people that we are serving with and for, the community that we're serving, to do things the right way. And so we need to make it high quality. So in your communication standpoints, this means use high resolution images. Don't let it be blurry or hard to read. Make sure that you proofread. If you're gonna take the time to write something and send it out, you know, proof it. And hopefully there's no typos on here. That would be really bad. I'll move quick in case there is. One example that we often fall prey to in the church world is we leverage clip art. Raise your hand if you know what clip art is. Okay. Repeat after me. Clip art is not my friend. Okay. And I'm kidding. But we do. We sometimes just kind of say, well, let's just throw some art on there, and then we don't really think about, well, how does this all communicate really what we're trying to do? So make it high quality. Keep it simple and clear, and easily shared. So this is not a political, I don't want to get into anything political, but I just want to ask a question. Does anybody know really what Jeb Bush was trying to sell when it came to the Republican primary? Anybody? What was Donald Trump trying to sell? Well, but what was, he had one statement.
Make America great again.
Make America great again. So it doesn't matter if you resonated with Jeb Bush, his policies, or Donald Trump, or even someone on the Democratic side. He crafted a message that resonated with a large base of people. And one of those people is now the president, and the other one is not. But that matters. He created a simple message that was concise and easy to share, easy to be to remember and be understood. The next thing is to be consistent, and this is across the board, and this kind of falls under the simple and intentional and consistent, but to choose your language carefully. Again, we talked about in the beginning that we have acronyms and we say things a certain way and we kind of rely on this insider language and we assume that people know what we're talking about. But really think about what we're saying. For example, something that stuck out to me, I heard a pastor say, and it completely shifted my mind. Every time we come to offering time at church, we say, we're going to invite the ushers to come forward so we can take up our tithes and offerings, right? And I was just at Silver Dollar City earlier this week, and some train robbers are on, the train stops, and the train robbers come and they take up the gold and the money and the silver of the people riding on the train. Take up means like we're holding somebody up. And in reality, what we're doing at offering time is worshiping. We're giving. It's time to bring our offering before the Lord. And that's such a minor shift. And I'm like you, like me, you maybe have never even thought of that before. But I thought, man, that language matters to someone who's never given an offering. To say that the church is going to take money is a completely different statement than saying we're inviting you to give to the mission of God. Do you hear the difference in that? Our language matters. And so take time. As you're talking through what's important to, as you're talking through the ministries of your church and what you'll do, take the time to really craft how are we going to talk about this thing, whatever it is, or how are we going to talk about offering? How are we going to talk about serving in the local church? And then land on that and then use it over and over and over again so that it kind of seeps into the culture and helps build the culture of your local context. The next thing is to always give a call to action. Give people clear directions. Again, we think we say something. If you've ever led a team or have been in charge of any sort of delegating, and then you show up to something that was supposed to happen and it didn't happen the way it was supposed to, and you're like, I had that conversation 5 times with that person. How did we still not get it right? Over and over, make sure that the communication is clear with very clear call to actions and clear next steps. And so it doesn't matter if you're talking about on a Facebook post or on your website, in your bulletin, whatever communication piece you're talking about, don't leave any room for imagination of what the reader should do. Give them very clear directions of here's what you should do next. The next part is media, how and where we say it. And so this is really hard to see. What you're seeing there are circles with different communication pieces. So signage, email blasts, websites, Twitter, Facebook, sermons, all these different ways in which your church, your local context, might be communicating with your internal, with those inside your church and those outside. And so every day we're flooded with communication messages. I mean, you cannot go anywhere and not just be flooded with some sort of marketing and advertising and messaging. It's everywhere. You can't get around it. And so for us, the challenge as a local church is, how do we find our voice in the midst of that noise? Because we, like we said before, what we're sharing, we believe, is of the utmost importance. It's eternal. Everything else that's being sold it's going away at some point, right? But what we are wanting to talk about, the story that we have to offer, is eternal. And so it's important that we kind of find our voice in that noise, and then also have good strategy on how we're delivering that. And so that's kind of where we're going with the media portion. And so we don't want to contribute to that noise. We want to kind of have a unified approach. And so all the different mediums, all the different ways in which you can communicate, have their strengths, and they're great on their own, but you need as a church to have a consolidated approach. And so for most ministries, the website serves as your hub for communication. And it has all the most important information that you need as far as what you can expect at a service. And you have full control over that. No one else can control that. Whereas if Facebook changes their platform overnight, which they sometimes do, you can't control that. Your ability to communicate through that method might shift a little bit. But your website can integrate with social media, can integrate with a church management system. If you have something like that, where your church database. You can integrate it with email captures, obviously sermons and other elements that can all work together through your website. And the website, when was the last time you looked at a newspaper when you were looking for something? Looking for a car, looking for a place to stay, or looking for a church, right? You went to Google. You went to Google, or you went to Bing, or you went online, or maybe you looked at Facebook for recommendations. And so this, again, the website gives you one of your greatest opportunities to be found online. So if a new, and how I got into this 9 years ago is I was serving on the board of a local church, and phenomenal things were happening in the church, but the website was awful. I mean, if you were age 20 to 50 and you moved, probably even 60, and you moved to Springfield at the time, and the best case scenario, right, is that they're looking to attend your church. Somebody wants to attend your church. That's the best case scenario. Most likely, you're trying to reach people that don't even have a desire. But if they were looking for your church in this context, if they had hit the website, they were not coming. And so it's important. I mean, this is kind of what got me into this, was the help organizations communicate through this. And so now, whenever somebody goes online and searches through Google, your goal for you is to come up, is to be on those search results, and to have the opportunity to shake a hand and to meet face to face and to hear that story. A staggering statistic, maybe for some, that 80% of people will view your church website before deciding whether or not to visit your church. That's how important your church website is. And so for me, in that context, what I saw and what scared me was how many people were hitting this website and we never even got the opportunity to meet them. We never got to hear their story. We never got to love on their kids. We never got to share the good news with them because they hit our website and they're like, oh, I wouldn't belong there. And so, it's important for us in the context of the local church to realize that our greeters, our parking lot attendants, they are no longer our first impression team. Our first impression team is online. Our first impression happens long before we shake a hand and meet someone. So the question for us is, if somebody hits our church website, are we going to get the opportunity to meet them or not? And our goal is, obviously, we want that opportunity. We want them to feel welcome and invited and to have the opportunity to minister to them and grow a relationship with them. So some must-haves on a church website. The first is great design, and this is not there are, in the church world. We can have the tendency to do things that we think are cool because they're cool. And one of my favorite quotes of a book that I've ever read is that cool wears off and useful never does. So if you're doing something because it's cool and that's your reason for doing it, it's only a matter of time before that was a waste of time and a waste of money. But if you are doing something that is useful, it can also be cool too, and that's great if it is. But if you're doing something that is useful and is serving a function, then that's a different type of investment. But great design is not just about being cool. In fact, it actually matters to users. And so actually people, nearly half, 46% of people say that a website's design is their number one criterion for determining the credibility of an organization. So if somebody hits your website and it doesn't even feel like it's credible, you have lost credibility just like that. Again, it goes back to that, of that 80%, how many are we getting the opportunity to meet? And again, it's like if you're shopping online or looking at hotel, looking at pictures before you stay somewhere. Pictures are going to tell you a lot whether or not you're going to end up booking that place, right? The next piece here, clear language. I skipped that. Service times and location obviously are one of the things that are most important that you need to have there. Make sure that it's easy for them to know where you are and when you meet. Clear language, so that again, we talked about the insider language. Write your website copy, everything about your website. Write it so that it would make perfect sense to someone who had never stepped into a church before. Because if you err on that side, you're not excluding anyone, right? If you err on the side of we're just, well, maybe they're probably going to have some sort of church background, you have unintentionally created a barrier, communication barrier, communication gap, and we want to avoid that. So clear language. Another key element is to create a welcome page, a specific page that is 100% designed with a first-time guest in mind. And so these would have the things that would talk about, where do you park? What about my kids? And in that, ask the questions in advance before they ask them. So for kids, well, who's going to be teaching my kids? Well, we know that you're going to ask that. So before you ask, all of our kids, all of our teachers have been attending church for 6 months and have we have a background check on file and they're done every year or whatever. Ease those concerns, address those potential barriers before they're even asked. So that's the welcome page, the start page is for that. And when I say welcome page, I don't mean the home page. I mean you have a clearly defined page in your navigation that maybe says start here or new with a question mark, that you are driving traffic so that way if I've never been there before and I'm not sure what to expect, I'm easily and quickly going to go to that place. The next thing is a staff page, and so if you're a staff member, like it or not, you're kind of a big deal when it comes to first-time visitor. They're interested in who is going to be, who's on staff and who's leading the church, and so they want to see your face. And why that's important, what's helpful about that to you as a church leader, is if somebody comes then into your context, into your local church, they feel like they already know you a little bit. And that's a good thing, because now you've kind of helped them understand what to expect and they've maybe taken down their guard a little bit, a little less guarded and a little more ready to engage in worship. The next thing is a sermon player, and so you need to, whether it's audio or video or both, you need to be having that on your website for every Sunday. Because people are interested before they come, they'd love to be able to hear and kind of get an idea of what they're going to experience. If you're a pastor, you've gone through a lot of work in discerning what God would have for you to share and crafting that message and delivering it. And whether you're a church of 30 or 300, if you don't put that anywhere else, the ability for that message to move people and God to use that message stops at the end of that day. But if you have crafted that message and you've delivered it and you've recorded it, now all of a sudden through the power of the website and social media, you may impact somebody. God may change the life of somebody on the other side of the country because of your message. And it's really, to me, I get jazzed about that. I get excited that God could use us to completely impact somebody on the other side of the world. And the only thing that's keeping us from doing that is a simple piece of technology. And there are many ways that we can do that. So that's something that your site should have. The next thing is online giving. Obviously there are lots of studies about different demographics and how they give and why they give. And so if you are trying to engage and bring younger demographics especially into the practice of giving, then this is something that you have to have. Younger people are not carrying cash, and even older people are less and less likely to carry cash. And so it's important that you make that an option. Search engine optimization is a really long way of saying being able to be found online. And so if you have any questions specifically about that, I'd love to talk to you, but that one is a little bit deeper technology level. There's a tool on the back of your, the next thing here is to be mobile friendly, and there is a URL on the back under execution on your worksheet that will help you determine whether or not your website is user friendly. And the reason that that, is mobile friendly. And the reason that that matters is because most likely more than 50% of the people that are visiting your church website are doing it from a device other than their computer. They're probably using their phone or a tablet, and so it's important that they not have to pinch and zoom. Again, it goes back to the credibility and the design. Does this engage me? Does it seem credible? Am I able to find what I need? So that is, again, there's a tool under execution, very bottom right, that says mobile-friendly testing, and so you can go there and find out if your website is mobile friendly. So now we're going to move into social media just a little bit. And social media defined is websites and applications that enable users to create and share content or to participate in social networking. And so lots of people talk down about social media, and I find myself in that category too. Sometimes it just frustrates me for a lot of different reasons. But I want to talk through a few different myths about social media. And the first myth is this, that social media is only used by younger generations. There's this idea that social media is a young person's game. And in fact, you can see this is a little bit hard to read. Again, I'm sorry about the screen. But this is a chart that shows the usage of social media by age group. And so this bottom line is 65 plus, 50 to 64, 30 to 49, and then 18 to 29. And so this year is 2006, and then down here at this end is 2017. And you can notice that by 2014, even the oldest bracket here of 65 plus, one out of four, and then look at this line, the 50 to 64. Look at the jump from here to here. And so by 2017, about 70%, 65 or 70% of people in the age group of 50 to 64 are active on social media. So this tells us that it's not just about reaching younger folks, that social media is not just about younger people. The next myth is that interactions on social media are fake, that it's not real communication, it's just for fun. So raise your hand if you've ever seen a social media conflict in a comments. You lived through the last election. You saw it. You know what I'm talking about. Social media, and if you're honest, you've probably unfollowed somebody that you just, I can't take that anymore, right? Or hopefully you're not the person being unfollowed. You don't want to be that. But we have to realize that social media interactions, those are real people behind the keyboard. Those are eternal souls behind the keyboard. And so how we interact on social media matters, but we have to recognize that social media interactions are real. In fact, this was staggering to me. And this is according to Pew Research, that the average user of a social networking site has more close ties and is half as likely to be socially isolated as the average American. And so this means that we can actually take this tool, this social media tool, and use it for good. This can be a positive piece of our ministry and our strategy. And so social media, if it can be used to bring hurt and destruction, which we've seen, we've all just said that, we've seen that, it can also be used to bring hope and redemption. That's the good news for us. The third myth is that social media is free. And this one is kind of a half myth because, yes, it is free. It's free to set up your accounts and everything. But if you're going to leverage it what it's capable of, it's going to cost you time. You're going to have a strategy and be really leveraging it and doing it well. And it's also going to cost you some dollars because if you are running your page the way that you're supposed to, let's just use Facebook as an example, as a ministry, you should have a Facebook page and not a profile, okay? If people can request your church's page as a friend, then you're not set up as a page. You're set up as an individual profile, and technically you're breaking Facebook's guidelines by doing that as an organization and not as an individual. So that's one thing that if that's how your church is currently set up, I would encourage you to set up a page instead. And that's actually better for you as well, because there's some people can then check in when they come to your place, to your worship service, which then increases your reach. And you can also do some targeted advertising. And so that's one piece that whether you're a small church in a small area or you're a medium-sized church in a large metropolitan area, Facebook advertising is actually a very, very affordable and efficient way for you to connect with your community, to share about upcoming events, or to share about a certain sermon series. Maybe you're offering a class on divorce support. There are going to be people all around your community that have no connections to your church that could benefit from something like that. So if you're doing something like that, and hopefully we are, then promote it. And so if you go to business.facebook.com, you can actually create a business manager profile, which then allows you to create targeted groups. So if you have more questions about that, you can see me afterwards for that. The fourth myth is that you have to do it all. I'm kind of like this, and this may be part of our human makeup, or how we're wired, that nobody can do it as good as I can. I need to do it. I have to have control of it, right? I know none of your pastors are like that. I know if you're a pastor, you're not like that. But you do not have to do it all. There are people in your congregation. In fact, if you have somebody, that, especially if they tend to be younger, because they may then have naturally integrated to using technology, this could be a ministry for them. Now all of a sudden you've created an opportunity for people to serve, and it looks completely different. This is not a service opportunity that the church had 10 years ago, but now we do. This is another way that people can serve. And so that you do not have to do it all. If there's not people inside your church, there are organizations, there are other agencies, other people that do that for a very small fee. And so you can reach your community using social media and specifically Facebook advertising at a very low cost. The last myth to talk about here is that being active on social media as a church is optional. There are 7.4 billion people on the planet, and 2.3 billion are active social media users. So that is slightly less than the entire population of China and India combined. So if we were to look at social media users as a country, we're talking about a huge people group. And so maybe it's time for us as a church to just stop looking at social media as this just kind of thing that functions, and actually look at it as a community, as an opportunity to be missionaries. We have the opportunity to share our message, to share our mission on social media with this mission field. So some tips for social media: post regularly, post often. If you are a church and you haven't posted anything since 2015's Christmas recital, your neighborhood, your community finds you online, clicks on your Facebook page, and they may think that you've shut down. Right? If you have things happening in your church, share that you have things happening. Again, keep that communication, keep it in mind that there are going to be people outside of your church that are going to see it and are going to read it. So don't use the insider language. Talk in more general terms that are going to address, that are going to resonate with your whole audience. The next is to post balanced content. Don't always just be posting, hey, this Wednesday night's dinner is meatloaf, and then the next week, this Wednesday night's dinner is pizza, right? Switch it up. Talk about, do a recap of this last Sunday, and then link to, you could pull a quote from the pastor's message on Sunday, post it on Monday, and then link to the sermon online. And now you're driving people back. Maybe they've missed the message. They're in your church and they've missed the message. You've engaged them to come back and listen, or maybe they haven't been to your church at all and they're able to listen. The next is to use images and videos. Statistics tell us that posts with images and videos perform. They get seen more regularly and get shared and liked more regularly, so use images and videos. Don't feed the trolls. Does anybody know what an online troll is? Okay, so a troll is someone who just shows up to cause trouble. They don't really want to engage. They don't really want to have a good conversation. They're just there to be there. Those are the people that if you were around them, they just like to hear themselves talk and they're going to keep talking. And so they're going to do the same thing on social media. So there's a rule of threes for that. The first time is if somebody asks a question or makes a comment, to engage them and answer or address their comment or question or concern. The second one is to clarify. If they come back again and say, "Oh, I'm sorry that you felt that, what we meant to say," or, you know, you clarify it. And then the third time, anybody guess? Move on. Yeah. Don't hang out there. Don't feed the trolls. So answer the question, clarify, and then move on, recognizing there's no way in which this ends in a win, right? This is only going to go downhill, and they're going to try to make everybody look bad in the process. And that applies to us in our personal lives as well, not just in the ministry context.
So do you block them or just don't respond to them?
That's a really great question. And so that is a thing that you can do as a page, is you can block people. I would say not to block them unless they're a serial offender. If it's one post or one thread and things get a little weird or get a little tense, and you just drop it. If then they start to, that becomes a habit, or they start to just start spreading falsehoods or things like that, then I would suggest that you block them. Great question. The last thing here is to celebrate people. So one, that matters because people are the business that we're in as the church. People matter to God and they matter to us in the local context. So we celebrate their wins. We celebrate baptisms. We celebrate all the things that God is doing in people's lives. The second piece of that is that it encourages those individuals. It's an encouragement when they see that our church is rallying behind them, not just inside the church, but in our social media channels. And the third is it's a great way to equip that person to share their faith. So if you are having baptisms and then you post the picture of somebody getting baptized, now they get to share about their baptism experience. And now their friends and their friends of friends have now not only experienced that and connected the dots that this person goes to your church, but more importantly, that this person has accepted Christ as their Savior. And that's the mission, that's what we're all about. So this is a great way to also increase engagement online. So tips for you, and I want to wrap up quickly just in case there are any questions. But again, for you as individuals and specifically pastors, to be active, to post balanced content, don't let it be all about church. You're an actual individual, and you have a family, and you have other things going on in your life. And so when people connect with you online and you share the struggles or the funny things that are happening in your family, now all of a sudden you've become more real to the people that you serve alongside and lead in the context of the local church. You become more approachable. You become more of an everyday person. You're off of the platform, off of the behind the pulpit, and you're living life together. And so be authentic in your social media. And the next thing here is to steward your influence. Our words matter. We can't say things and then take it back. And we can't type things and then take it back. And again, this is something that unfortunately, the political climate that we've been in has brought out the worst, I believe, in some of our culture and even in the church, unfortunately. But as Christians, we have to steward our influence. We have the ability to build people up or tear people down. Our words spoken, our words typed have that ability. And so on your social media, steward your influence. Some good questions to ask. Why am I posting this? What do I hope people that read this or see this, what do I hope that they're going to take from it? Does it reflect positively on my Savior, my family, my church, my neighbors? Will non-believers receive what I'm posting? Am I speaking in a way that I'm not isolating my friends, my connections that may be non-believers? And what I definitely don't want to do is create a barrier to speak love into their life, right? If I'm posting stuff that then breaks a relationship, I no longer have the opportunity to minister to them. So the last thing here, does it help or hurt my ability to speak truth into their lives? So thank you again for being here. I think we have about 5 minutes, if I'm looking correctly. What kind of questions, are there any questions that I might be able to answer for you?
I had to leave a minute, but
sure.
On the myth, on the five myths,
yes.
I didn't get what that first one was.
The first myth is... Yes, that it's for the younger generation.
For the younger generation.
Yeah, and the stats there is that even the fastest growing group in social media is actually that middle group, the 45 to 50s, I think. Is
okay.
So, yep. Any other, you had a question?
What's the liability on posting pictures and videos, especially of kids?
Great question. So the question was, in case you didn't hear it, what's the liability of posting pictures of and videos of kids, especially? And your NASSAFE, I think, is one of the most popular things. So your insurance, you should definitely ask that question. I'm glad you brought that up. There are also waivers online that you can find and then have every parent or guardian sign that and say, and what you may even do is when you're signing them up for a permission slip for a course of the year is to include on that permission slip that I give the church permission to use their image in publications or promotions, and then give them an option to opt out of that if they don't want to, and that way you are covering your bases. And then whoever is executing that, whoever's taking pictures, needs to make sure that there's a system in place that we're not violating that. So that's a great point. And I know even in the foster care system and things like that, there are certain things that you have to be aware of. So
if you design your own website, is there a place you can go like to get some objective feedback to find out what you're doing right or what you're doing wrong?
That's a great question. In fact, my company does some websites and social media as well. And so if you actually go to tensiongroup.com/ministry, there's a free ebook that's available to anyone, and this is for anyone, and I have actually a card back there with that URL on it if you'd like it. But it's tensiongroup.com/ministry, and it will give you, you can download an ebook of some of the best practices for the website, and then there's also an option there for a free web review if you'd like that. So, great. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Do you guys use HTML or website
building? So, my company, we do everything in WordPress. And the reason that we do that is because it's affordable. There are so many plugins and options available for, and it's user friendly. So there's so many, it can grow and be used for our clients, but it's also very user friendly, and they don't, you know, we have some plugins that we use that keep them from having to get in and hack all the code up.
Can you get a domain through that?
Through WordPress?
Yeah.
No, you would have to purchase your domain separately. So you could do that through GoDaddy or register.com. A domain is the actual address. And so my church's or for my business website, that would be tensiongroup.com. So you have to purchase and own that domain. So if you don't have a website and you're wanting to start from scratch, you'd have to have that domain. And then you have to have a hosting environment where that site is built. And then that... through the technical aspects of who you would hire to do that, you're connecting that domain to the hosting environment. So, yes, sir.
Just a comment, as people are building and looking at the ideas of how to structure,
yes.
Always think of the person who will follow you.
That's right.
It must be transferable.
That's right. So creating something that is not if only one person can do it, you've created something that's not a good sustainable model. Yeah, that's a great point. So, yeah, make sure that you're building something that is going to last, and especially if you're having to invest dollars, right? Look for value, not cost. Yes, ma'am.
I was going to ask you, we're kind of in a pinch in our church. My husband's a pastor of. Right after we got there, one of the college students, they made a website. That was his thing about we need to get a website.
Right.
Well, they, over the years, they've moved on. Our website was attacked by a gay rights group,
mm-hmm.
and nobody knows what the password, nobody knows anything about it. We'd like to take it off
right.
and start over.
Yes.
Because it's not been done for years.
Right. And That's a great example.
How do we get that off of there?
Well, stick around and I'll help you. I can give you some resources on that. But that's a great example of why that matters, that you build something that can be, that's transferable and can be managed in the long run. I'm out of time, and so if you have any other questions, I'd love to talk to you, love to answer any questions that you have. I'd love to just say a real quick prayer for you, if that's okay. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for this group of leaders and this group of pastors. And I just pray, God, that as they move on about their ministry, that they leave this day inspired and equipped to do great things. I thank you for the gifts and the abilities that you've given each one. And I just pray that they, in their local context, will live that out, and that we all together will be making a difference for all of eternity. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for being here.